Hide your secrets, hide your code. Twinkle, twinkle, little satellite. And Max Headroom might host your next job interview. These stories and much more on today's episode of MSP Dispatch.
This episode is presented by Huntress's Hackett 22, a series of interactive sessions led by cybersecurity pros and industry favorites to help you better understand threat actors and the tradecraft they use. Running November 14th through 16th with two chances to catch the content plus a separate optional zero-day workshop. To register for Hackett 22, visit this Huntress site. Additionally, for a chance to win one of five free zero-day sessions, register at go.oit.co/Hackett2022.
Good morning and welcome to the November 4th episode of MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. I'm Ray Rossini, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Tony Francisco. How you doing, Tony?
Excellent, brother. Excellent. It's the 4th. Time is flying by. We already jumped. We're one step fully into the new month. End of the year is coming up. What about you? How are you doing?
I mean, we just got over Halloween. We went over some scary security stories. Now we're worried about stuff in the sky. I mean, I can't complain.
What stuff in the sky?
So, satellites. I mean, we know Starlink has satellites. We know all the cell carriers have satellites. But have you ever like looked at the number of actual satellites in the sky?
There's more than just a few.
You would think, right? Like, I think satellites, I think these big monstrous things, like there's only so much space. Well, the article we have lists the number of satellites in orbit by major country as of January 1st, 2022. And of course, the U.S. is in the lead, so yay, go USA. But, you know, it is a ridiculously outstanding number of satellites. Looking at China with almost 500 satellites, looking at Russia with almost 200 satellites, and the good old U.S. of A., we will not be beaten. Did you ever think it was that many satellites?
Interesting little debris knowledge here. Do you know that I believe it's Kenya has over, from what I understand, a registration of over 300,000 satellite registrations. Like, so they can do up to that capacity. And SpaceX has, I believe, 40,000. Confirm registrations.
So that was one of the more interesting takeaways from this story is that Starlink has the most SpaceX has the most registrations or the most satellites in the sky of anybody. Like globally, it's them. So
interesting.
Which we covered in a previous story where you can get Starlink on any continent now. So it does make sense, right?
Oh man, I have so many different articles and I would love if anyone knows anything about this to kind of chime in. This is clearly the future. We're talking right now about the internet's thing, that trend that's going to happen at a later time. We're talking right now, we're all talking about 1992, 93, maybe and this is an eventuality. And, I've heard so much and I talk a lot about the laws of, laws versus governance and how do you have governance in space and the amount of allocated licenses, to orbit and low Earth orbit versus, anyway, we can go on and on about this, but it is the future, people. This is going to happen. This is not an arguable topic. There's an eventuality here. And I think, maybe everyone will say, I remember on the MSP Dispatch them talking about this so long ago.
There you go. And we'll be able to do this thing for the MSP Dispatch one. There you go. But what do you say? We got some news to cover, right?
Let's get into the news.
So in a top story on security, new open source tool scans S3 buckets, as reported by Bill Tulis on Bleeping Computer. A new open source scanner has hit the interwebs, dubbed S3 Secrets Scanner. The tool scans Amazon S3, otherwise known as buckets, looking for secrets mistakenly stored in public. During a recent exercise, security researcher Elon Harrell discovered that no tool for scanning data leaks exists. So he created his own and published it as an open source tool on GitHub. The tool, created in Python, scans for a list of open buckets, lists the contents of each bucket, downloads relevant text files, and then scans them for secrets, finally forwarding the results to your SIEM. The article goes on to list the permissions necessary for the bucket to be public and scannable. Tony, this seems like a good thing, right? We don't want our secrets out there. You shouldn't be storing credentials hard-coded in anything public or in any code at all. An automated tool, this seems like the hackers, something the hackers would have already had. It's surprising that they didn't, right? Like, am I off base here?
What is the argument against this and for this? Because they're both valid. It's analogous to, okay, we're going to publish a list of known exploits. Well, then guess what? There are some people out there like they're just harvesting that. This is what they're going to attack, and they're going to attack the low hanging fruit, the people that are not patching, which are quite a few, as you know from the previous stories that we talk about all the time.
I feel like we have to do like this to cover all the stories we've talked about not patching. Phil's just going to cover the whole screen.
I know. This particular tool, though, goes out and uncovers this for us, and it's open source. So, of course, some hackers are going to be using that. But this goes back to the reason for the show. It's for the education. We're exposing the very audience that listens to this particular group and proliferating as much knowledge as possible. And if one of the people listening can tell one other person that is not listening, this particular tool exists, go scan. And then there's a catharsis that occurs because, oh my gosh, I have vulnerabilities in my network or my customers' networks. We've done our job. We have absolutely done our job. And it's education through exposure, but it's a double-edged sword. And I think you kind of brought up that maybe attackers can use this. Yes, they can. So what are your thoughts, Ray?
I mean, anything that makes for more automated, easily accessible tools to not secure our tools, because obviously that's not what this is doing, but to create awareness of the potential leaks or the potential cracks in the foundation, I'm all for it. Listen, nobody's infallible, right? Like I can't tell you how many pieces of code I have out there that still have, comments, hash marks with like to do this and to do that. And like, don't forget to tie in this piece of application. It happens to all of us, right? And we, even with the best of intentions, even with the best of QA, having an automated tool just takes out that judgment, that thought process, that potentially missing stuff, right? Like, I don't know about you, but the few times a year, not enough, but the times of year I code, it's almost always in the middle of the night with some Mountain Dew code red and, probably not my most clear-headed thinking moments. So to say you can miss something, it happens. It happens to anybody. So I like having tools like this. I like having, even though you can always say, yeah, the tools, the bad guys are going to use it. But again, I'll say what I started with. I'm very surprised if they didn't already have something like this. It just wasn't published. This gentleman is just doing, doing a public service saying, here's this Python tool I created. Now you can do this yourself and send it to your SIEM. I kind of like that. I think that's pretty cool. So good on you, man. Congrats.
I agree. Everyone, don't forget, though, there are some out there with a little bit more moral ambiguity that can use this particular tool for not the best purposes.
So, Tony, our next story, as if there weren't enough satellites in space, you're going to tell us to look for more?
Yes. In our next story, SiliconANGLE.com talks about it by Maria Deutscher. Amazon is opening up a new satellite factory. Amazon.com Inc. will open a satellite production facility in Kirkland, Washington to support its multi-billion-dollar project, Kuiper Initiative. The company announced the plan on Thursday. Project Kuiper, hope my pronunciation is correct, is an initiative which Amazon plans to build and deploy more than 3,200 internet satellites in orbit. According to the company, its satellite constellation will provide internet access in areas that are beyond the reach of ground-based internet infrastructure. Amazon has stated that it intends to invest more than $10 billion US in Project Kuiper over time. SpaceX Corp, likewise, is deploying its Starlink internet satellite constellations in low Earth orbit. OneWeb Ltd., a London-based company that competes with SpaceX and Amazon's Project Kuiper division, is taking the same approach. Ray, we have three companies. I just said three companies, one of which is investing, just to be clear, $10 billion. Those are the new guys. Rhymes with Bamazon. SpaceX has been investing quite a bit into that. What are your thoughts? I mean, we mentioned in the beginning of the show that this is like the 1992, 93, where there's rumors of the internets, the tubes and connecting things. Is this the 1992, 93 scenario we're talking about, something that could be just a trend?
I mean, I don't think so, right? Because we're talking about increased connectivity. We're talking about very freeing connectivity. Many, many moons ago, I looked into creating an ISP. This is back in the 90s, early 2000s. But I looked into creating an ISP because DSL sucked. And I looked in some wireless options. I looked in terrestrial options, especially in the early 2010s. There's a lot of dark fiber in the ground. It's very easy to sublease. What's not easy, though, is laying cable, getting easement rights, getting utility pole rights. There's a million other obstacles you get to adding connectivity. I think the 2015-2014 number, when I looked at it, was even for Comcast, that already has right-of-way agreements, it costs $1,000 per house passed to lay new cable on a block. So your average U.S. Residential block in a suburban area has 10 houses to a block on each side. So you're at 20 grand or you're at a ridiculous amount of money per block. And that's just for the block, not for the connectivity. So seeing stuff like this where you're out in space, it's really the Wild West. This is about as greenfield as you could possibly get. I forget if it's greenfield or blue ocean or yellow submarine. I don't know. We'll go with something. But, but the point is, I can absolutely understand it. If you can afford it, get your stuff up there, increase the connectivity, and you basically have no barriers, right? There's no utilities poles in space. You can just throw that connectivity out there, and it's getting better and better and better. You remember the satellite comms back in the 90s where you were lucky to get like 64K down and you still had to use a dial-up for going upstream? I mean, this is a million times better. I'm all for it. And I don't think it's a fad. Back to your original question.
No, I for those in the cellular world, I was one of the first people to kind of release the CDPD, cellular digital packet data, back in 94, I believe it was, end of 93, early 94, I don't even think it was a full whopping 1K. Transmission in between the analog channels. But then we moved into much higher speeds. And I remember talking about in 2005 how Verizon, GTE, Bell Atlantic, 9X merged to become Verizon, they're going to get rid of their Fios, even though that was taken off. And I said, because with the advent of the newer higher speed technologies, that last mile, as they call it, just as you said, $1,000 per house, that last mile is brutal. The juice isn't worth the squeeze. And everyone said, no, they'll never get rid of the last mile. Sure enough, they sold that off. Frontier was a big acquisition. Yeah. And I think we're moving to the next non-terrestrial base system. But the possibilities are limitless. Can you imagine just shopping? Everything is going to be almost virtual. Even your jobs are going to be virtual. Maybe your interviews are going to be virtual. Well, I don't know, right? What are your thoughts on that?
That's an excellent point. Let's discuss it a little bit. So straight out of the sci-fi, our third top story in the business section covers VR, virtual reality job interviews, as reported by Elizabeth Hodson on BBC.com. Anyone who's been through the process knows that a job interview can be both terrifying and sometimes your time to shine. But soon it could be virtual as well. Earlier this year, students at Sandwell College in West Bromwich put on VR headsets to do mock interviews. Their avatars were cartoon-like 3D representations of themselves. The interviewer, however, was a piece of AI-driven software. At the conclusion of the interview, the AI told the student what they did wrong and what they did right. student Ayan Ahmed described it as freeing because he felt there was no human judging him. BodySwap's chief executive officer, Christoph Mallet, says the idea is that people can keep on practicing until they feel ready for a real interview. While BodySwap's is currently focused on mock job interrogations, Swedish AI firm TenGuy is already allowing firms in the real world to get a computer to do the initial interviews. The AI is represented as a talking cartoon head. TenGuy's CEO, Elin Oberg Martinsen, says the central aim of the software is to avoid making wrong assumptions such as judging someone on their appearance. Tony, the focus presently is on DEI, right? Diversity, equity, and inclusion. We have our inherent biases. So, you know, there's always the stigma that you might actually, I don't want to say persecute because that's not the right term, but you might negatively score somebody based on your underlying thoughts that may not have come to the forefront, but you may be negatively affecting grading somebody because, for example, and these are stereotypes, so don't go yelling at me, but a woman might be less aggressive in salary negotiations, or someone from a certain country might be less aggressive in stating what they're looking for, what kind of boss they demand. These kind of interviews, because it's computer driven, take away those biases, whether explicit or implicit. Do you think that could have any impact on DEI going forward?
There's also the belonging. They're adding that in right now. I don't know if you know that. It's a cocktail of emotion right now. Because I do believe that the subtleties, the micro expressions during the interview, are extraordinarily telling, and I feed on them when I interview people. And because I see what's really going on, you can change the way you act. It's almost impossible to change the way you react. And if you can have somebody make certain reactions, you can get a good idea of what their construct looks like and how they're going to fit, as opposed to just, you know, the over the counter questions. But all I hear is max headroom. That's all I hear is max headroom. And I'm wondering who's going to take that role first.
I mean, and if you're old enough to remember max headroom, please.
Dude, I just date us. I just completely 75% of the audience right there just said,
What is max headroom?
Hey Siri.
Well, you know what? I hope they end up on Back to the Future too, because that would be a nice little. That's probably the last time I saw Max Headroom. But no, I mean, I think it's really cool, and I think, you know, coming up with, I know at least in my in our company, we have multiple stages of interviews. The first interview is that first pass, right? It's very rough. It's very quick. You're just cleaning out stuff that, you know, I don't want to call them undesirable. You're cleaning out people that you don't think would be good candidates for your, they looked good on paper, but didn't interview well or whatever it happened to be. So any way to get through that without adding inherent bias, without, you know, possibly doing a disservice to some, without tying up the time of the interviewers and leave them focused on the more meaningful parts of the interview, I'm all for. As long as we don't lose that human contact, right? As long as we don't, you have to have those, you know, there is something to be said when I'm talking to somebody. That's why we do video calls as opposed to just phone calls, right? Or in-person meetings. There's little cues and stuff that you pick up, like you were talking about. That's hard to pass off to a computer. Not to say they couldn't catch those micro expressions. They could. But interpreting them, you know, maybe you got to leave it up to the person that wrote the software. So I'm curious where this is going to go. If this is something you would do in your own MSP or in your own business, let us know in the comments below. If you think we're freaking crazy, also let us know in the comments below. Or if you just want to know who Max Headroom is, maybe Phil will put it in a blooper or something if we can get out without copyright. But Tony, why don't we get into the notables, man?
Let's jump right into it. In my first notable mention from TheVerge.com, Elon Musk wastes no time in changing Twitter. On his first day, Twitter's new chief twit quietly changed the homepage to send a message. Changing Twitter's homepage is an example of how Musk, less than 3 days into his reign as chief twit, has started to swiftly change the company from the inside out. He's preparing to lay off a significant portion of employees in the coming days. He has fast-tracked changes to Twitter itself, such as ordering its paid subscription feature, Super Follows, to be renamed Subscriptions, that's quote subscriptions, in a rushed update to Twitter's mobile app. Musk is also discussing using Starlink, his satellite-based internet service as SpaceX, to make Twitter available in countries where it's not currently easy to access.
In my notable mention, NSA shares supply chain security tips, as reported by Sergio Gatlan on bleepingcomputer.com. NSA, CISA, and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, ODNI, have shared a new set of suggested practices that software vendors, or suppliers, can follow to secure the supply chain. The guidance was built through the Endurance Security Framework. As quoted, prevention is often seen as the responsibility of the software developer, as they are required to securely develop and deliver code, verify third-party components, and harden the build environment. But the supplier also holds a critical responsibility in ensuring the security and integrity of our software, the NSA said on Monday. The ESF will release one more advisory focused on the customer, aka acquiring organizations, part of the software supply chain lifecycle after issuing the first chapter in September with guidance for software developers.
Jumping straight into our community events, on November 4th at 5 p.m., 38 at 38, episode number 6, featuring Daniel Laura. On November 7th, 8th, and 9th, an in-person event, Acronis CyberFit Summit 2022 in Miami Beach, Florida. On November 8th at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the MSP Dispatch presented by the MSP Media Network. That's Tony and Ray. On the 9th through the 11th, another in-person event, IT Nation Connect by ConnectWise in Orlando, Florida. And finally, on November 11th at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the MSP Dispatch weekly wrap-up presented by the MSP Media Network.
Hi, I'm Aaron, and I'm a jobaholic. We all have something in common. We all have a worst job story. Each episode, I'll welcome one guest to share their most insane worst job story. And in return, I'll share one of mine. Join me the first Friday of every month for new episodes of 38 at 38.
So how'd you like today's show? If you liked it, hit the thumbs up button. If you didn't, go find a satellite and punch it in space. If you want to hear more, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on YouTube or your favorite podcatcher. Did you know we also have a Discord where we post stories all week? You can pose your own stories and even vote on which ones we'll cover. As my friend Rich Mankey says, make sure to tell a friend. Also, be sure to follow us on social media at MSP Media TV or follow us on TikTok for a Tony dance, watching his eyebrows be on fleek. Have any questions? Email news at mspmedia.tv for answers on the next episode or leave a voicemail 833-MSP-NETWORK. Tony, we got satellites. We got Max Headroom. We got CISA recommendations. I mean, this is a packed episode. This is a powerhouse, you know, powerhouse episode, man.
Some people, like when your brain gets a little bit overloaded, this show is one of two things. It is the true geek porn, or it is instant narcolepsy for those that have a problem sleeping. There's like brain over, and it's kind of like reading a complicated book. There's only so many pages you can get there. You just fall asleep, but you want to keep reading it. There's so much information that we convey to the audience, and I love hearing that how informative this is in such a small snippet of time. And of course, everyone loves the bloopers. So,
if I can boil that down, we are the magazine you take to the bathroom. And if you don't know who Max Headroom is, this won't make any sense, but tick, 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 take care of yourselves and each other.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
A new open source scanner has hit the interwebs, dubbed S3 Scanit. During a recent so close. All right. They're advertising. At the conclusion of the interview, the AI told the student what they did wrong and what. At the conclusion of the interview, the AI student waxed on, waxed off. That I would love to see. I'd love to see like an AI driven like karate school. All right. All right. But the supplier also hold. Tony, we've talked many times about supply. Oh, wait. This is not a. Blah, blah, blah. This is a notable. Tony, ignore everything I said. Don't talk back to me. You don't need to. I don't care what you think this time.
God. I was like, oh,
I was on a roll. I'm like, yeah, let's go. Let's do this. And I realized the timer's not going. And that was my cue. Like, hey, Ray, shut up. So
I was waiting for the suck it. I just did that with no bloopers. Okay. Oh, yeah. Camera off. Here we go.
So how'd you like today's episode? If you liked it, hit the thumbs up. Was that a little too much like...
You know what that was? That was the Raiders of the Lost Ark. Just like, just bang. Just, okay. I killed off a dude with the sword. Check the box. Let's move on.
Yeah, let's just go. You know the Raiders of the Lost Ark theory that Indiana Jones had absolutely... If he wasn't in the story, it would have the exact same beginning and end? Yeah, go watch the movie again and then... you'd be like, what the f- they talked about on Big Bang Theory. Anyway, all right. Now that I've broken Tony, hold on.
I'm sweating because my brain is like iterating through.
Okay.